Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here
Thursday, October 11th, 2018. Today we're going to talk about some teams here in the NFL, and one team I really wanted to get to this week in advance of their game tonight against the New York Giants, a team that was 13-3 last year, won the Super Bowl, was the best team in football. This year they are 2-3. They have gotten to their loss total after just 5 games, and there is some panic, it seems like, in Philadelphia. So joining me to discuss that, whether the Eagles should be panicking, whether Eagles fans should be panicking, is the lead writer for The Athletic Philadelphia, a good friend of the show, Mr. Shil Kapadia. Shil, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. It's been too long. I thought maybe you broke up with me and were trying to, you know, let me down gently. So it was good to hear from you this weekend as the Eagles were losing back-to-back games. And invite me onto the pod. Plenty to talk about with this team, that's for sure.
I think the last time I had you on was after the Super Bowl. So it was a very celebratory podcast. Things have changed.
Things have changed quite a bit. Yeah, like you said, matched their loss total from a year ago. Some surprises, I think, on the roster and how they're performing. Other areas that maybe they were able to cover up a little bit better last year. So we'll see how they do against the Giants and whether they can kind of get this thing together over the next 3 weeks before they have a bye.
Mm-hmm. So let's start with just the big picture. We'll get to some of the individual issues maybe as we go through this. But in terms of the bigger story surrounding the Eagles, I mean, if you are an Eagles fan, do you think they should be extremely concerned about the Eagles' chances in 2018? Do you think they should be a little concerned? Or do you think that it's just sort of a mediocre 5-game sample and they're going to be just fine over the final 11 games of the year?
I would probably take the somewhat concerned, the second one you mentioned there. You know, I think when you look at the first 5 games, you can't fool yourself into thinking they've played well and they've gotten some tough breaks and they've had injuries here and there. I think that's the wrong way to look at it. I think there are sort of glaring weaknesses on this team that need to be addressed one way or another, whether it's scheme, personnel, guys just playing better, whatever the case may be. So those are very real. At the same time, they're in this very unique spot where the NFC East looks legitimately terrible. There were all 4 teams lost last weekend. It doesn't look like a division where you're going to need like 12 wins to win it. So I think big picture wise, what you're hoping if you're an Eagles fan is that, you know, take the lumps, take kind of the bumps in the road here over the next month, maybe the next 4, 5, 6 weeks, and hope that you're still in position to make a run and that you're playing your best football come December. I think that possibility, that formula is still there for them. Again, I don't think it's like a guarantee that that's going to happen, but I do think that's still there for them.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the, whether it's a personnel group, whether it's a side of the ball, whether it's an aspect of football, what do you think is the place where the Eagles are struggling the most versus the team we saw win the Super Bowl a year ago?
I would probably say up front with the offensive line. I think that's been the most surprising aspect of this season so far. I thought, you know, they had the best, you know, maybe one of the best, whatever, offensive lines in the NFL last year. And that was so key when they moved from Carson Wentz to Nick Foles. It was like you still had this foundation who knew what it was doing with a very diverse run game, who was able to protect the passer, give him time to find receivers, even though it wasn't the best group of weapons in the NFL. It was just really the foundation of the Super Bowl winning Eagles in 2017, and it just hasn't been the case so far this year. Carson Wentz is being sacked on, I think it's 9% of his dropbacks. The numbers against the blitz are very bad. Even when he's not being sacked, he's getting hit a ton, and there are a lot of aspects to that. You know, Jason Peters is older, and he's been okay. He hasn't been great. They made a move at left guard, replacing Stefan Wisniewski with Isaac Seumalo. Jason Kelce's been okay, but he's dealing with a knee injury, so he's not like this, you know, athletic center on every snap that's just getting out in space and crushing defenders. Brandon Brooks, the right guard, he's been okay. And maybe the biggest surprise has been Lane Johnson, the right tackle. The guy was an all-pro last year. He was deserving of that. He went up against some of the best pass rushers in the NFL and held his own on a weekly basis. And now it's been back-to-back weeks where he's given up sack fumbles that have resulted in key turnovers in each of their last 2 losses. So, you know, there are some of those things I mentioned you can get fixed. Maybe you get a little bit healthier, and others, it's really just a matter of guys playing better.
So last year, right around this time, maybe a little earlier, I don't remember exactly which week it was, but they had Isaac Suomalo at left guard starting, and he was struggling, and so they replaced him, I think, first with Chance Warmack, and then with Stephen Wisniewski, and that kind of, you know, it seemed like it solved things. Like, the offensive line was playing well, but it really seemed like it went to the next level after they replaced Suomalo with, eventually with Wisniewski. Is there a, you know, like, they're not going to bench Lane Johnson, obviously, but do you think the Suomalo switch where he's coming back into lineup now is likely to fix things? Or is it just sort of like, it seems like maybe they're just hoping that they're going to try and make a change and hope that that seems to coalesce the offensive line?
Yeah, I think they're hoping that helps. I don't think they think it's going to be as dramatic last year. Suomalo, like you mentioned, started the first 2 weeks of the season, had a really bad game against the Chiefs. And then even at that point, like you said, they went to Chance Warmack. And then they went to this really weird left guard rotation where they were playing Warmack and Wisniewski, like rotating series, which I had never seen before. It seemed pretty strange. And then ultimately, it was like they threw their hands up and just realized that Wisniewski was their best option at left guard, and he played really well, specifically down the stretch and in the playoffs. And so this year, they didn't like, I guess, how Wisniewski was playing. I didn't think he was awful, but he did have a bad game against the Titans a couple weeks ago. They've been raving about the work that Suomalo did in the offseason. They thought he was just this drastically improved player, and so they feel like he can give them a better chance both in the short term and the long term there at left guard. I would be surprised if that was like the big fix that maybe last year's change was. I still think they have the talent there up front to get it together. Everybody playing together will certainly help. Jason Peters has to stay healthy. He's kind of been in and out of games, and at his age, you really worry if he's going to be able to do that. And I don't know, Lane Johnson, I mean, he kind of admitted that part of it is sort of a mental thing when you're not playing well and confident and all that. So I think the pieces are in place there for them to put it all together. I don't envision, though, any other real personnel moves on the offensive line.
Now, obviously, it's difficult to extricate, you know, quarterback performance from offensive line performance, but we saw Nick Foles really struggle the first 2 weeks of the year. He was not the guy we saw in the final two games of the 2017 postseason. More like the guy we saw maybe perhaps in the first 3.5 games of Nick Foles' tenure as quarterback last year. But in terms of Carson Wentz, you know, the numbers look pretty good. Like you said, the sack rate is certainly there at 9%, but what have you seen from him so far this year in terms of his, you know, his first three games coming back from the torn ACL? Does he look close to 100%? Is he the guy who, you know, we saw basically play at an MVP level last season so far this year?
Yeah, I think there's different aspects to it with Wentz. I think as a passer, he actually, to me, looks a little bit better. He's been pretty consistent with his accuracy. He's completing 67% of his passes, averaging 7.5 yards per attempt. Those numbers are up from a year ago. I think his decision making has been very good. It really has, you know, and then physically coming off the knee injury, no, he's not the same guy. You know, I actually think he's moved probably better than I thought he would look at this point in his recovery, but there certainly are plays where you look at it last year and there would be pressure in the pocket and he would find some way to get away. It's kind of like that first step or that maybe those first two or three steps where you're behind the line of scrimmage and trying to break through the defensive line and get into open space. He was able to make those plays last year, and there certainly have been instances this year where he's not been able to do that. And there was a play against the Titans where it was like him against Harold Landry in space where Wentz is trying to get to the sideline, and Landry just caught up with him, which is something you didn't see a lot of last year. So that's certainly going to be kind of a work-in-progress type deal. The improvisational plays, the plays when protection breaks down, making plays outside of structure, all those different types of things. I don't think they're going to be quite there as much as they were last year, although he's still capable of doing that. And then I think we're seeing some natural regression, whether it's third down or red zone. Like Wentz's numbers last year in those situations, I mean, just historically good. He led the league really in most categories associated with those situations. I mean, in the red zone last year, 40% of his attempts resulted in touchdowns, which is like, you know, you're not going to sustain that over the course of your career. So there are some schematic things also associated with that drop. But, you know, overall, I actually think he's like the least of their problems. You know, I think if they can protect him better, I think he can move the offense and they can be much more productive than they've been so far.
I was going to ask you about the schematic thing, actually, because maybe something that I haven't seen a lot or written about, or maybe might be understated in terms of thinking about the Eagles on offense so far this year, is that they've lost a good chunk of the people who were helping mold this offense last year. Of course, Doug Peterson is still around, but John DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach, is now the offensive coordinator in Minnesota. Frank Reich, offensive coordinator, is now the head coach in Indianapolis. I mean, do you think that's part of it, or just you're having, you know, people in expanded roles, and they're going to take some time to adjust to, you know, there are elements of this sort of new post-Reich, post-DeFilippo Eagles offense?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a part of it. I mean, with those three guys, Peterson, Reich, and DeFilippo, I mean, DeFilippo, I think, will probably be a head coach at some point here in the next few years. So those were guys with really strong pedigrees who worked really well together. You know, every Saturday night, Doug Peterson and Frank Reich would have a meeting, just those two, and they'd go over kind of the game script mm-hmm. for the first series or the first 15 plays or whatever. And Reich was a really good voice in Peterson's ear. I mean, Reich was liked by everybody in the organization, where he, you know, when he speaks, he's not like, no one ever felt offended or that, you know, why is this guy telling me this? Like, he just kind of had that tone and that demeanor that everyone knew he was on their side, even when he was suggesting things. And the other thing Peterson did is he gives certain situations to certain coach. What I mean by that is he'll give, like, John DeFilippo is in charge of the red zone game planning, and Frank Reich, you're in charge of third down. And those guys stick with those situations throughout the entire year. And, wow. and Reich and DeFilippo were in charge of third down and red zone. So I do think that was certainly a factor. And in terms of scripting the plays, this has been another issue for the Eagles. They've only scored 7 points in the first quarter all season long. And last year, I think they scored like the third most points in the first quarter. And they have a formula they want to play with. They want to get up early. They want to then let the defense kind of tee off on the quarterback, playing, you know, mostly rushing with four defenders and not having to worry about the run game. And I do think Peterson is better at a play caller when he's not forced into, hey, we're down by two touchdowns, we've got to throw the ball. When he's got kind of the whole menu at his disposal, I think we saw that last year, where they would get up a little bit early and then they would just be able to kind of build on that because they were in control of the game. And that just hasn't been the case this year either.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned the running game, and Jay Ajayi, of course, was the primary running back in this offense when healthy. It's no longer the case. He tore his ACL in pass protection, I believe, last week. He's done for the year. How do you see this running game shaking out post-Ajayi? I mean, do you think, I guess, number one, how do you think it's going to sort of shake out when people are healthy in that backfield with the roster the Eagles currently have? And then, I guess, second, do you think they would be in a position, given the restructuring they made this week, to possibly trade for a running back of some nature?
Yeah, I think the guys they have on the roster, first of all, Corey Clement, he's been out a couple weeks, but he was really good for them last year, and he's supposed to return against the Giants. So I think he will be like the starting running back. I don't think that means he's going to, you know, have like 90% of the touches. I think it's still a committee thing. Wendell Smallwood, you know, I think he's sort of an up and down player, I would say. I don't totally, you know, you look at the numbers and they're very good this year. Watching him, I don't totally trust him, whether it's pass protection, whether it's dropped as a receiver, you know, even as a running back, ball security, all those different things. You know, to his credit, he looks improved from a year ago in his first 2 years, but I'm still not sure he's the guy you want playing a big role offensively. Darren Sproles has been out with a hamstring injury. I'm not sure what you're going to get from him. He'll return at some point, but he's up there in age like Peters, and so he's always at risk of being injured as well. And then they have Josh Adams, who's an undrafted free agent out of Notre Dame. So I think they're going to mix and match quite a bit. I like Clement the most out of that group. I've actually been surprised he hasn't played a bigger role. He was so good for them in the postseason. He was their leading receiver, actually, in the Super Bowl. He's good in pass protection. So I think he's got an opportunity here to carve out a bigger role if he's able to stay healthy and perform. In terms of a trade, you know, I kind of feel like they're going to do something. I don't know what I know. The Le'Veon Bell buzz was out there and then dismissed. I don't know that it's going to be something that splashy, but I feel like you look at the best teams around the NFL right now, and they're just so hard to defend. And whether that's personnel, scheme, weapons, whatever, you know, that just seems to be the case. And I look at the Eagles through the first five games here, and it just doesn't feel like they've been that hard to defend. So, you know, I think they might look at it internally and say, we don't want to do anything crazy and give up, you know, all sorts of compensation. At the same time, you know, you still have the quarterback. You still have the offensive line. The NFC East is not very good. I could see them saying, you know what, now's the time. Let's just be a little bit aggressive here. And I don't know, it could be a running back. I think it could be a wide receiver as well. You know, they lost Mike Wallace, and they're really kind of missing that vertical, that speed element on the outside with Alshon Jeffrey. So I think Howie Roseman's going to look pretty hard at those two areas and say, you know what, our defense might not be as good this year. Our best chance is to really outscore teams and get back to the offense we were a year ago. And we might need a little bit more juice to do that. So let's go out and see if we can add kind of a playmaker on offense.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like it made sense when you looked at their roster, especially after Ajayi got injured, that they would maybe go after somebody. And then it also seems like the fact that they restructured Fletcher Cox's contract, created $6.5 million in cap space, is there any reason they would do that if it were not to possibly add somebody with a reasonable salary in the trade market right now?
No, I think executives say, you know, all right, you do that just so you have the flexibility to make a move. But to me, that's more like if you make those restructures in August, you know, that seems more like the explanation there. If you're doing it here after week five, to me, it seems like, all right, we know we're going to do something. We know we need this money. You got to do it at some point anyway. You know, Fletcher Cox gets more money in his pocket right away. He's not mad about it. Let's go ahead and open up that cap space so we can pounce on an opportunity as soon as it comes up. So, you know, in some scenarios, it's just to have the flexibility in case you want to do something, but I'm with you. I think this points to, all right, we're going to make a move. Let's go ahead and free up that cap space.
Yeah, $11.1 million in cap space now for the Eagles at the moment. All right, we'll be back with Shale in a second. First, wanted to talk about our friends at ZipRecruiter. Now, of course, we're mentioning the Eagles. The Eagles, of course, lost several of their coaches to other teams after winning the Super Bowl, but we know that winning the Super Bowl is not necessarily a sign that you're going to be a great coach somewhere else. Otherwise, the entire league would be Bill Belichick assistants, and they don't seem to do very well elsewhere. I'd recommend that teams not just rely on teams who go to the Super Bowl to hire new coaches. I would look at ZipRecruiter because it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the United States. And that's coming from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. So you know ZipRecruiter is reliable. You know that they're getting great reviews from people who are already using it. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. My last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now back to the show. I mean, we talked about the offensive bunch. On the defensive side of the ball, is there, again, a positional group where you think they need to play better or the Eagles are disappointed with how they've performed through the first 5 weeks of the year?
It's definitely the secondary. I mean, you know, you looked at the secondary last year, and I don't think anyone thought it was lights out. We know they gave up, what, 505 yards or whatever it was in the Super Bowl. Certainly they were not the reason the Eagles won that game. But, you know, for the year, I think the defense was fifth in DVOA last year. And, again, they have a formula they want to play with. They've invested so heavily in their defensive line. They want to mostly rush the passer with four and, you know, get to the quarterback so that they can devote seven players in coverage. But really the entire secondary has struggled. Jalen Mills has not been good at one cornerback spot. Ronald Darby has not played well at the other cornerback spot. You know, Malcolm Jenkins has been fine, but not as good, I would say, as he was a year ago. And then they lose free safety Rodney McLeod to an injury. And, you know, I don't think Jim Schwartz, honestly, the defensive coordinator, has had his best year either. That Titans game, they came up with this scheme where they thought the Titans were not going to be able to throw the ball downfield at all. And, you know, that I understand why they would think that, because the Titans had no explosive plays. And then the Titans come out and they're just burning them time and again over the deep middle of the field throughout the game. I think they had four explosive plays, the Titans and Marcus Mariota did, in that football game. So I don't think Schwartz should get a free pass either. And this one's a little different than the offensive line. You know, the offensive line, I can talk myself into, hey, they've got the players. They just, you know, kind of need to get it together. On this side of the ball, it's a bit tougher. You know, I think they are pretty easy to attack right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have a great personnel move to make at any of those spots. I don't think the talent is great at the cornerback position. And, you know, I think it might be better than it's been the past couple of weeks, but I do think this defense is not going to be as good as it was a year ago.
Yeah, it seems like they already replaced Corey Graham with Avante Maddox. It seems like that might have been the move they're hoping might change things. But, yeah, I mean, this is a secondary. I think maybe last year it seems like, I don't want to say Eagles fans were spoiled. It seems like it's too harsh. But I just, in terms of just, you know, they were not investing a ton at cornerback last year. They made some trades. But Patrick Robinson was not supposed to be a great slot cornerback, but he ended up being a great slot cornerback. So I just, it seems like maybe they're willing to accept subpar cornerback play, assuming that the pass rush is going to make up for it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you know, I think that is their overall thought. And their thought is, all right, keep guys in front of us. And if we're forcing teams to string together 9 and 10 play drives and they're, you know, completing 8-yard passes, that's fine. We can rally and tackle and win that way. The problem this year is that they're not, you know, they're giving up explosive plays. And I think the big thing is that when they blitzed last year, again, they're not a big blitz team, but mm-hmm. when they did do it last year, opponents average is 5.1 yards per play. So that was the fourth best mark in the NFL. When they did blitz, it was really working. This year, that number's all the way up to 9.6, wow. which is the third worst mark in the league. And, you know, I dug into the numbers a little more to say, well, maybe the blitz isn't getting home and do quarterbacks have more time? That's mm-hmm. not really the case. I mean, quarterbacks are getting rid of the ball really quickly, like 2.3, 2.4 seconds, and they're mm-hmm. still hitting on these explosive plays. So to me, it really is mostly a coverage issue. I mean, every week Jalen Mills is getting beat on a double move. He gives mm-hmm. up an explosive play really every week. He was leading the NFL in pass interference penalties going into last week. I don't know if that's still the case. Ronald Darby's tackling has been really bad. He's been at the heart of some of those explosive plays. And then their safety play has not been good when those corners are kind of expecting help in the deep middle of the field. You know, those corners have had snaps where they're jumping underneath stuff. And that's led to big plays by the opponent. So I know that's what Jim Schwartz and the coaches are kind of harping on. It's like, don't get greedy and try to stop every slant and every comeback route on mm-hmm. the outside. Let's rally and tackle and lift to play another down and not give up those big plays on the outside, which will be really interesting against the Giants because they, you know, in a way wrote the book on, you know, what teams are doing to the Eagles a little bit last year mm-hmm. when Eli Manning picked the Eagles apart, where they were just running slant, 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 double move, it seems mm-hmm. like, was their entire offense. And, you know, that's been a pretty good formula for opposing offenses this year as well.
I just thinking about Eli Manning picking a team apart, it just seems like it's from another universe, another time. Jalen Mills, by the way, does still lead the league in defensive pass interference penalties accepted 3 and defensive penalty yards accepted 71. So still a problem. I mean, is there a player on the Eagles or again, a positional group on the Eagles who you think, even given that they're struggling, has been sort of a bright light this season, or a player who's improved dramatically or exceeded expectations from what we might have expected from him heading into the season?
Boy, that's tough on the defense. You know, I'm going to say the obvious one, and it, you know, I don't know if it's a huge improvement because he was so good last year, but Fletcher Cox has been like mm-hmm. this dominant force week in and week out. It's like you watch the Eagles film and it's like, oh, you know, they got burned on the outside and up, oh, you know, busted coverage here. And then you watch the defensive line and he's just like manhandling, offensive linemen mm-hmm. week in and week out every snap. He's taken on more of a leadership role. I'm sure people saw him, kind of get in Jalen Mills' face last week when Mills and Adam Thielen were going at it after a play. Fletcher Cox kind of like spoke for every Eagles fan and was like, get your butt back on the line of scrimmage and we got to line up for the field goal unit. So his sack numbers have like never been huge, but he's got mm-hmm. 3 so far this season. Again, it's not a huge number, but his pressures, I mean, he by far leads the team. He's been dominant against the run. So there are so many good defensive tackles in the NFL, but I've just kind of been in awe of watching Fletcher Cox on a weekly basis. He's been really, really good so far this year.
Yeah, leads the team with 12 quarterback hits as well, so definitely getting to the quarterback a fair amount. So in terms of these next few weeks before the bye, like you mentioned, they're at the Giants on tonight. They're not not necessarily the toughest matchup, if I have to be honest with you, in terms of watching the Giants play this year. Then they host Carolina, who's been pretty good so far, and they're at the Jaguars in a big game in Week 8, the sort of the shadow Super Bowl from a year ago. Do they have to go 3-0 in these three games for Eagles fans to hit that bye week and feel comfortable about the second half of the year? If they go 2-1, is that fine? I mean, what has to happen over the next 3 weeks for the Eagles to feel good about their team heading into the second half of the year?
I mean, honestly, I think 2-1 is probably fine, and, 1-2 might not be the end of the world when you look at the NFC East. You know, they haven't played a division game yet, but you're right, they do have this kind of tough schedule. The rest of the way, I think Football Outsiders has them with the sixth toughest schedule.
Wow.
The rest of the way. So the games they've played so far was supposed to be the easy part, and they really didn't get through that very well. You know, I think one thing Eagles fans would like to see is just schematically, offensively, a little more creativity, or games where you say, wow, you know, Peterson really helped them win that game. You know, some of the offensive line issues are not on the offensive line. Like, they had a play last week where they're, you know, going empty in the backfield, and the Vikings bring a blitz, and it's like you don't have enough guys to block it up, and no one's open, and Carson Wentz takes a hit. Or there was a screen pass as well where the Vikings bring a blitz, and it was just like, all right, you know, Mike Zimmer won that down before the ball was even snapped. And, you know, one more, there was an RPO, I remember, the first, I think it was the first play of the game, where, you know, Xavier Rhodes went up and he's playing press coverage and really disrupts Alshon Jeffrey within that 5-yard window. Wentz's read is to pull the ball and throw it out there, and there's nowhere to go with it. So some of these things are, you know, I don't think the coaching staff should get a free pass. I think they were so good last year and out-scheming teams, it felt like, on a weekly basis, and that has not been the case this year. So I think if you can go 2-1 and the offense is, you know, maybe they score 30 in one or two of those games, I think that will have people feeling a lot better about this team than maybe they do right now.
Mm-hmm. So last question for you, Shale. Now, we've talked about this on the show before. You have a storied track record of bringing success to the teams you cover as a beat writer. Have you ever covered a team that was sub 500 during your time as a NFL writer?
I did. My first year actually writing about football full time was Andy Reid's last year. And that was, I think, 2012. And
yep,
they were 4-12 that season. Guys were getting fired left and right. Players were sounding off left and right. And so I always say, as a football writer, like, you don't want to be sort of 7-9, 8-8. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fun to cover the teams that have a chance to win the Super Bowl. And then it's also fun to cover the teams that are kind of complete train wrecks as well, I will say. That's the only one.
Yeah, over the ensuing, I believe, six seasons, you've never covered a team, I believe, that has won fewer than 10 games or missed the postseason. Is that accurate?
I think that's right, because the Eagles, I had the first 2 years with Chip Kelly. They won 10 apiece, made the playoffs one of the years.
Oh, right.
My 2 years in Seattle, they made the playoffs and were in the divisional round both years. And then, of course, the Eagles won the Super Bowl last year.
Are you concerned that your incredible ability to win football games is wearing off?
Well, you know, locally here, we have this thing with our podcast, Birds with Friends, called the Kapadia
yes.
Curse, where it seems like every time over the last year or so I've written, like, a big feature on somebody, they've gone downhill. You know, I wrote a big piece on Eagles offensive line coach Jeff Stoutland, and the offensive line has struggled. I wrote a big piece on Jay Ajayi having this new diet before the season, and he tore his ACL. Those are just last year. I did a big thing on the special teams coach Dave Fitt, and the special teams went down the tube. So I don't know if I'm the one who maybe I bring bad luck to individuals, but good luck to the team. I don't really know, but yeah, this is going to be a good test study the rest of the way. I would say that's the biggest storyline surrounding the Eagles right now, is kind of whether I have a positive or negative impact on them.
Do you think the only way to solve this is to write a column about yourself?
A column about what do you mean? What would that do? Then I'm going to, like, walk outside and, like, get hit by a car or something?
You're going to get injured, but the Eagles will be fine. It will solve the Eagles' problems.
Some have suggested, or I go the other way and, like, write a glowing feature on, like, Sean McVay or Alex Smith or something and see if it can have the impact on kind of the people who stand in the Eagles' way. So I think, you know, maybe if they lose two of three here or something, maybe it will be time to kind of test my powers a little bit and see how far-reaching they are.
Given how the Alex Smith played on Monday night, I think you already wrote that column. So I don't think you have to worry about that one.
Maybe you're right.
All right. Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on, Shale. Can you please tell people where they can check out more of your incredible work covering the Eagles and the NFL?
Sure. Yep. It's theathletic.com/Philly for all your Eagles and Philadelphia sports coverage. And then the podcast with Bo Wolf is Birds with Friends. And we record about three times a week. So thank you for having me on. And hopefully we can do it again soon.
Yes, sir. Always a pleasure, Mr. Capatia. We'll come back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Talked about a team that was struggling during the first half of the show. Now let's get to a team that is on a winning streak. 4-1 New Orleans Saints. And joining me to talk about them and Drew Brees' lengthy history with the New Orleans Saints is someone who's been covering Brees since the beginning of his career in New Orleans. It's ESPN's Mike Triplett. Mike, how are you?
Doing great. How you doing, Bill?
I'm great. I wrote a piece last week about Drew Brees and sort of the what-if scenarios. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. And the Drew Brees piece was basically just, you know, what if these little things had changed? What if he didn't get hurt? What if he broke out a year earlier? And then, of course, the most famous one is what if he had gone to work with the Miami Dolphins in free agency instead of signing with the New Orleans Saints? And, Mike, you were someone who helped me out with the article in terms of providing some context and what the Saints were thinking at the time in 2006. So, obviously, it was an organization in transition. Katrina happened the year before. They had fired their coaching staff. They had a new head coach coming in, Sean Payton. What were your thoughts during that process back then in terms of the likelihood of them getting Drew Brees and then how you felt about how the situation changed immediately after they had signed Drew Brees?
Yeah, look, that 2006 Saints season is one of the more unlikely things that's happened in sports.
Right.
I mean, you can't say enough about it. If it was a Disney movie, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, they were terrible. In 2005, they went 3-13. Aaron Brooks is last year. Jim Hazlitt's last year. Spending the whole year in San Antonio because they evacuated for Katrina. A realistic fear that the team might move and leave New Orleans and it wasn't until right around January 1st that they announced they were definitely coming back to New Orleans, which was a huge relief. But then they hire a coach, and Sean Payton wasn't a huge name yet back then. And the big news that year was getting Reggie Bush in the draft. I mean, the expectations for, you know, Drew Brees, he was a curiosity because of that major shoulder injury. Mm-hmm. And they went to the NFC Championship game that year. Right. Which is incredible. And they obviously haven't slowed down much since. I mean, they've had a lot of down years, 7-9 and 8-8, and missed the playoffs a few times. But Drew Brees and Sean Payton and this offense, they didn't just come back and start winning. It's been one of the more exciting brands of football in the league. I mean, we're seeing a lot of it with Sean McVay now. But Sean Payton has been a guy who knows how to take advantage of the current rules of the NFL and what Drew Brees has done over 13 years here. Is just unbelievable. So for a franchise that was down for the better part of 40 years, but especially at that time, to wind up with this duo, one of the all-time great offensive duos, what a turnaround. You can't say enough about it.
It's a kind of a bummer question to ask, and I'm going to ask you, and I understand if you don't have a great answer to it, but let me ask you, do you think, given the range of possibilities, do you think New Orleans would still have a football team if Drew Brees hadn't signed with the Saints?
Well, here's what we don't know is what could Sean Payton be without Drew Brees? Right. And your piece brought this to mind, and I've thought about this a bunch of times. I mean, at that point, they were thinking about drafting Matt Leinart. What would he have done with Matt Leinart? And the free agent quarterback that was on his way into town for a visit when they signed Brees was Josh McCown. What could Payton have done with Josh McCown? Or, you know, 2 or 3 years later, maybe he drafts Matt Ryan. Or, you know, I think Sean Payton would have been very successful, too. I think if Payton wasn't the coach, Drew Brees would have been successful. The pairing has made them all-time great. But I think either one of them would have found a way to win, even independent of each other. And I've always been curious. I'd love to actually go back to alternate history and see what Sean Payton would have done with other quarterbacks too. But they hit two home runs. If they didn't end up with either guy, the runner-up coaching candidate was Maurice Carthon. They had Maurice Carthon and Matt Leinart. I don't know what would have happened.
Does seem like a different scenario. And I mean, I mentioned this in the column, but there was also talk at the time that Sean Payton was interested in trading for Tony Romo, who he coached.
Yeah, no, that's another
Dallas.
Good one. You're exactly right.
So who knows how that would have gone if Tony Romo makes it to New Orleans. I mean, it's a fascinating set of outcomes, but obviously I think we're living in the best possible scenario for Saints fans, given that Drew Brees came here, Sean Payton came here, and since then it's been, you know, like you said, either very successful or, you know, average to slightly below average. I mean, do you think, from watching what you saw on Monday night in terms of the outpouring of emotion after he set the record, I mean, do you think fans are prepared for a post-Drew Brees future in New Orleans?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, there's some of that fan lethargy where he's been here for so long, they get really excited about. I'm telling you, Bill, there was more excitement about the Teddy Bridgewater trade from some fans than anything they've done in free agency or the draft in the last 5 years, just because the quarterback position is so exciting. They don't want Drew Brees to leave, of course, but they're also very excited to know who's going to be next. You know, this team, speaking of what-ifs, was very close to drafting Pat Mahomes. He was the pick if Lattimore hadn't gone 10, and you know, if Lattimore had gone 10, Mahomes would have gone 11 to the Saints. Can you imagine what a smooth transition that would be to another great quarterback? So I think fans are excited to know what's going to happen next, but I've been, you know, arguing for years. You don't want to move on from Drew Brees and then go looking. You do want to know what the backup plan is before you move on from Drew Brees. And, you know, it's interesting because Teddy Bridgewater, they traded for him, and he's a free agent again at the end of this year.
Right.
So unless Drew Brees announces, "I'm only playing one more year, I promise," or something, Bridgewater will probably leave. You know, so there are teams who will spin their wheels for over a decade trying to replace a guy like Drew Brees. The Miami Dolphins have been doing it ever since Dan Marino.
Right.
So no, that is not. No one is prepared for them to go into that great abyss.
Do you think when they traded for Teddy Bridgewater, they were making that trade thinking, maybe primarily, were they thinking, "Hey, we have a backup who gives us some security if Drew Brees gets hurt or struggles or isn't the same guy," or were they doing it thinking, "Okay, we're going to re-sign him and he's going to be our quarterback of the future whenever that comes for Drew Brees"?
Yeah, I think the second part was part of the reason they did it. Mm-hmm. But knowing that there's no guarantees with that. I mean, look how well Brees is still playing this year. Right. I don't think Teddy Bridgewater would sign up for a maybe. Mm-hmm. I think the only way they can lock down Bridgewater after this year is if Brees gets hurt or says, "I'm retiring after one more season," or something that's more of a guarantee for Bridgewater that he's not going to be sitting here for 3 or 4 years as a backup. Mm-hmm. But you know what's interesting? And I was actually going to pitch this to you at some point. We originally were talking about this as like, would the Buccaneers trade Jameis Winston when Fitzpatrick is playing so well? Mm-hmm. The quarterback landscape is kind of interesting. There aren't that many teams out there that are definitely going to be looking for a new starter in the offseason. I wonder if there is a team that's going to offer Teddy Bridgewater $15, $20 million to be their starter this year. Or if sitting behind Drew Brees and re-signing a 1 or 2 year deal in New Orleans might be the most attractive option for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, you think about this last offseason. Granted, we hadn't seen him play in the preseason, but it wasn't as if there was a ton of interest for Teddy Bridgewater to get, you know, sort of that, even if not like a full-time starting role, like a Sam Bradford sort of, you know, bridge role where he was going to be the short-term guy in advance of a rookie quarterback coming in. He didn't get that Tyrod Taylor sort of role in Cleveland. He was really seen as a backup everywhere. So, I mean, it's interesting because I think he is a starting capable player, but I think because he doesn't have the prototypical size, because he doesn't have the prototypical arm strength, I think that already eliminates some of the league in terms of being interested in him. So I think he has a smaller market. And of those teams, like you said, there's not a lot of teams who are necessarily going to be going out and looking for quarterbacks. This is a league where what, there were 5 first-round picks at quarterback last year? I mean, those guys were all going to be starters in 2019. So it's really remarkable to think about, you know, just how few teams, given how much turnover there was last year, how few teams are actually going to be in the market for a quarterback this year.
Yeah, we were trying to peg it. I mean, who knows what's going to happen with the Giants? Who knows if the Buccaneers decide to move on from Winston? Will Jacksonville? But, I mean, they Denver with Keenum, but they all just made investments in these guys. So the Saints, you know, I mean, maybe the landscape is right for them to hang on to Bridgewater. That would be an awfully smooth transition. The dream scenario, if you could get him to wait somehow, to go right from Breeze to Bridgewater would be a dream scenario, no doubt about it.
All right, we'll be back with Mike in a second. Let's talk about Dollar Shave Club, because I need to know, did you get ready today, and were you happy with how things went? I work from home. I can pretty much, if I want to, just wallow in filth, but I don't. I'm a gentleman, and I want to smell good. So I went to my friends at Dollar Shave Club. I went and grabbed some stuff, and now when I go to the bathroom, when I leave the bathroom, when I walk around in New York City, I'm not embarrassed of how I smell or how I look. I smell great. I look okay. That's not really Dollar Shave Club's fault. That's mostly my fault. But at least I smell good and I feel good about how I look and how I smell. Because Dollar Shave Club is everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. If I'm in the shower, I'm using their hydrating body cleanser. It's the perfect way to start the day. I feel smooth. Not that you need to know, but I feel smooth. I think it's pretty good. And it smells great, and that's the important thing. I don't want to embarrass myself on the subway. The subway smells bad enough already. I don't need to make it any worse. I know I've talked about the One Wipe Charlies before here on this show. They are a life-changing thing. They are incredibly comfortable. They're way better than whatever a certain Jets running back is working with. We're not even have to deal with that. It's so much better. Take one with you because, you know, I'm in New York. Sometimes you have to use the restroom when you're out in New York. It's better to have something to keep yourself clean than the alternative. And, I mean, I shower every day. I hope you do as well. I'm not going to judge you if you don't, but assuming that you do shower at some point, no matter what you need, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need. And that's not even talking about razor. It's not talking about the shave butter. Of course they have that. You don't need me to tell you that. It's in the name. Of course, Dollar Shave Club. And right now, you can get a Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5 each. They've got that shower set, the toothpaste and toothbrush set, or the famous shave butter and razor. No matter what you want to do, any one of those sets are just $5, and it's the best way to try out their amazing products. And after your starter set, products ship at regular price. Get yours today at dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. My last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show. So on the flip side of this team right now, of course, an uneven start with the loss in week 1, but now they're 4-1. They were in first place in the NFC South. They're looking like a very solid team in a division that, you know, certainly has some flaws. Atlanta has been a mess on defense. Carolina, the record is good at 3-1, but a couple of close victories have not been especially impressive when you actually watch them play. Some injuries there as well. In terms of the Saints, I mean, do you think 4-1 is a fair record for their level of play through 5 weeks of the year?
I think it's better than they're lucky to be 4-1. I mean, they should have lost that Browns game in week 2, when the Browns missed 4 kicks to keep them in the game.
Right.
And then fired their kicker the next day. So they were lucky to win that one. And then they earned the Falcons victory, but that was an overtime victory where the score was 43-37, I think, and it was whoever won the coin toss in overtime was going to win that game. Their defense was struggling so much. So to be 4-1 after struggling as much as they did in the first 3 weeks is got to feel like a blessing. But they played their best game of the year in week 4 against the Giants, and then they played even better in week 5 against the Redskins, and now they get a bye to lick their wounds a little bit. So it's really setting up nicely for them. The problem, though, is they're supposed to go 4-1, or maybe even 5-0 to start the season. I think our FPI or whatever has them with the toughest remaining schedule in the NFL from here on out. I mean, it's just a murderer's row at Baltimore, at Minnesota, the Rams, at the Bengals. Still 2 games to go against the Panthers. The Eagles are on the schedule, so they're gonna have to play their best football. But it looks like they're on the road. I mean, we're not going to see that top 10 defense from the Saints that it hinted like they might be pushing towards last year. But, you know, they've settled the ship a little more, where I think they can be a middle-of-the-pack defense and have some games where they play really well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about, because you figure, well, the offense is set. You don't have to worry about that. That's going to be fine as long as Drew Brees stays healthy. But, of course, the big drop-off has been on the defensive side of the ball, and it seems like specifically in the secondary, where it was a very good young unit last year. They bring in Patrick Robinson to play the slot from the Eagles, so you think, okay, well, that's set. That's going to be a great secondary. That has not been the case this year. It's been a major problem. They've already benched Ken Crawley. Patrick Robinson is on injured reserve, I believe. Marshawn Lattimore is now concussed, if I'm not mistaken. I may have the injuries wrong, but I believe that's the case. I mean, is there anyone...
That's all right, yep.
Is there anyone in the secondary playing well, or anyone you think the Saints can kind of count on as, okay, well, that's a person who's going to be reliable, and we can try and see what we can do about fixing the other parts of this secondary right now?
Well, they've been really good the last 2 weeks. If the last 2 weeks were weeks one and two, you know, nobody would bat an eye. They'd be talking about how great the secondary still was. Lattimore has really come back on strong. He did well against Julio Jones, and he did great against Odell Beckham. Before he suffered the concussion last week. And then surprisingly, even when he was hurt, Ken Crawley and P.J. Williams as the starters, while him and Patrick Robinson have been hurt, have played really well the last 2 weeks. They played great against the Redskins in that route. So they're holding down the fort. They've got some depth at safety. But I think we're going to see inconsistency. I think the key is that Lattimore continues to play like that number one corner, gets back healthy, and plays close to the level he played last year. Then you can kind of go patchwork and, you know, shadowing with safeties and zone coverage and whatever else you need to do with the other guys. But I think we'll see inconsistency. We'll see them have their bad days, and we'll see them have their good days. But it was looking really scary when you know, Fitzpatrick torched him in week one and then Matt Ryan torched him in week three. But I think that the ship has settled a little bit at least.
And do you think this is sort of the defense we're going to see the rest of the way? Do you think they would consider going out and making an acquisition? Is there would they go out and add a cornerback, or do you think they're kind of just settled with the guys they have and they're going to hope that they can coach them into a more consistent unit?
Yeah, it's just so hard, you know, especially since they don't have a first round pick or a third round pick next year. I don't know that they have the ammo to get a cornerback who solves everything, but they're going to continue to look. I mean, they're paper thin there. If they suffer another injury, they almost have to add somebody else, but I don't know that we're going to see a blockbuster deal that changes everything, because, you know, then all of a sudden they'd have a hole somewhere else, probably, if you're talking about trading a player. I mean, they are a little deep at linebacker. I saw that was one of your pitches in your trade column, and, I mean, something like that could make sense, but it's just so hard to think you can go find the answer in the middle of a football season.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I mentioned that they might consider trading Craig Robertson, who is playing some snaps for them now and played a lot last year, but is really, when the linebackers are healthy, seems to be strictly a special teams guy to the Steelers, who do need an inside linebacker. They're a mess there for Cody Sensabaugh. The problem is, from the Steelers' perspective, they're also a mess at cornerback, and they might not be interested in trading a cornerback away. And so, yeah, I think it's just tough because there's, you know, you look around the league and there's so few teams who have a surplus of cornerbacks, who are thinking, yeah, let's just get rid of one of these guys. It's just, it's such a hard position to fill, and the Saints seem so settled at that position that it's just tough to imagine them trading for another cornerback who's going to make a real impact in midseason. But I think it would be helpful if they could find the guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, what do you think would be a successful season for this Saints team? It seems like, you know, like you said, this is sort of where you expected them to be before the season, at 4-1 or so, possibly even 5-0. I mean, is this a situation now where, because it's so late in Drew Brees' career, like a successful season is Super Bowl or bust for the Saints?
Yeah, I do. I think it's Super Bowl or bust. Now, I wrote just this week that I think this year is Brees' best shot to win a Super Bowl. Now, I mean, the Rams are a freight train, so you can't label the Saints as the front runners in the NFC. But for a number of reasons, you know, the NFC being down, the Eagles, Vikings, Packers, Falcons all being down, I thought all those teams might stand in their way. I think they really want to exploit this opportunity right now. There's only four NFC teams with a winning record right
now.
That's crazy. So I feel like they've got to strike now. But in reality, I think it's a 2 to 3 year window that they have, because what I wrote this week was they're kind of the opposite of the Eagles last year with cheap Carson Wentz, or the Seahawks when Russell Wilson was still on his rookie contract. They're paying a ton for their quarterback, $25 million a year. But they've got so much cheap talent. They've got Michael Thomas on a rookie deal, Marshawn Lattimore on a rookie deal, Alvin Kamara on a rookie deal. And the list of Pro Bowlers that are going to be free agents over the next 3 years, you know, they've got about two more years before all these guys become free agents, not to mention some of their great offensive linemen like Max Unger and Andres Pete and Larry Warford. They're not going to be able to afford to keep this collection of talent together. So I would say if Breeze is going to win another Super Bowl, he's probably got to do it this year or next year. And to have this 4-1 start while the rest of the NFC is down, I'd say this is the year they really ought to do it. It just gets harder and harder every year after this one. So, yeah, Super Bowl or bust. Even, you know, it's a lot to ask. They're not the Super Bowl front runner. But this is the year that they're probably going to have their best shot at it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I've written a lot about their cap situation in the past. I can say because of all those young players, it's pretty good now heading into 2019, $17 million in cap space with really the only starters who are hitting free agency in Bridgewater's a backup, but Mark Ingram, Manti Te'o, all three of the tight ends are free agents, unrestricted free agents. And then I believe, Ken Crawley is a restricted free agent. So, I mean, they're in pretty good shape for next year.
It's not too bad after this year. Yeah, this year and next, they can afford to keep this roster together. And then all of a sudden, it starts to get really expensive after that.
Yes. Well, it's a good problem to have, having too much talent to pay. But I'm sure the Saints can figure it out.
Exactly.
Mike, where can people check out more of the stuff you do cover in the Saints?
Well, obviously, we've got a page dedicated to every team and a reporter dedicated to every team on ESPN.com. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Mike Triplett.
Awesome. Well, Mike, thank you so much. We'll have you back on later on during this, hopefully, Super Bowl run for the New Orleans Saints.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much to our guests today, Shel Kapadia of The Athletic, Mike Triplett of ESPN, covering the Eagles and the Saints, respectively. Hope you enjoyed it. We have more audio coming for you next week. Of course, we're going to recap Week 6 on Monday. More on that next week.